This is Buddhism in a Nutshell, Session 5. It's Tuesday, October 11th. And we are going to start with just a meditation while people are filtering in. So this one tonight is going to be the mind like the ocean. This is that other one that I talked about that I like between the ocean, mind like the ocean and mind like the sky. It gives you just kind of a different words to work with that might help evoke a feeling and a little bit more perception as you learn to work with your mind. Okay. So sit comfortably on your cushion or your chair and work through that 7-point meditation posture that we've been working with. And just slowly kind of settle your body, get into position, walk your way through your body and your arms and your neck, and start to focus your attention on your breathing, and breathe naturally, using one of the breathing meditations that we've talked about. I think for us it was either bare attention or counting the breaths, and use that to settle your mind and bring it into a state of deeper focus and concentration. We're ready to engage in meditation. Create an altruistic motivation for this meditation session and think that you are meditating not just for your own individual benefit, but you're taking the time now to meditate and develop your mind to become a wiser and kinder person, able to be of benefit to all beings. As you gain a deeper level of concentration and focus, loosen that concentration just slightly, emphasizing the element of mindfulness in your meditation a little bit more strongly. Allow your mind to be attentive and observant of whatever comes to notice, regardless of what it is. Don't identify with the mental elements arising. Simply observe them like a tourist. Allow them to arise as you observe them and pass away. Without getting involved, just be aware. Allow your mindful attention to expand, to encompass your entire sphere of experience of consciousness. Forget that there is an observer and something being observed. Simply imagine your experience, your consciousness, as being just like the sky, completely clear, vast, spacious, and without end. Concentrate on this experience and identify with this experience. Calm, clear, spacious awareness. The mind can be likened to an ocean, and the thoughts and other mental events to fish swimming through that clear, spacious medium. We're ordinarily unaware of the nature of the mind, and instead we observe only the fish-like thoughts. It's as though we're observing an aquarium through a large glass wall, and at first we only notice the fish. If someone were to tell us to observe the clear water in which the fish were swimming, we might at first have difficulty even noticing it because of its transparency. But by simply realizing that the fish could not be swimming unless there was some substance to swim in, we can take our attention away from observing the fish and focus instead on the clear water. In a similar fashion, we let go of paying attention to our fish-like thoughts. Instead, step back and recognize the clear light nature of our mind within which all of our thoughts and other mental events occur. Identify with our minds like an ocean with that clear spaciousness. In our ordinary state of mind, as we go about our business every day, having conversations and planning, thinking, worrying, making lists, and so on, it is as if we are living on the surface of the ocean. All those thoughts and feelings and ideas seem to fill our minds, making lots of waves, lots of turbulence and agitation. But as we identify more and more with our ocean-like mind, let go of the wave-like emotions and fish-like thoughts, it is as if we start to descend to the quiet depths of that ocean-like mind. And we reach a state of mind that is more peaceful, still, free of agitation and disturbance. In the case of the aquarium, we will continue to see the fish swimming in front of us as we focus on the water. However, when we focus our attention on the clear, light nature of our mind, our thoughts will begin to diminish in intensity and frequency, thereby quieting the mind and enhancing our ability to concentrate. Whenever we identify with and are carried away uncontrollably by a thought, a feeling, we lose any awareness of the spacious clarity of our mind, of the vast, clear, and knowing nature of the mind within each thought or feeling occurs. Our perspective becomes small and constricted. It is as if all there is are waves and we've lost the ocean. We lose that open and quiet spaciousness. When we can simply observe these thoughts and feelings arising without getting involved, when we can identify with the ocean instead of the fish and the waves, then we can reside in that spacious purity of our basic clarity of mind. Calm, clear, peaceful, open spaciousness. Without agitation, without delusions, without anxiety and distress, without dissatisfaction and attachments and aversions. Finally, dedicate all the positive energy you've created through the practice of mindful meditation to becoming a better and better person who's more at peace in life and who can bring more peace and well-being to others in every moment of every day. Slowly bring your attention back to the room. So you guys have had some opportunities to try some of these different meditations. What did you think of that one? The mind like the ocean, because we did mind like the sky, mind like the ocean. These are a couple of different feelings. I personally, there isn't a right or wrong. Now we're just asking opinions. The mind like the ocean, I remember actually learning that one years ago. And for whatever reason, that seemed to work a little bit better for me, to understand that spaciousness of the mind, because it was like maybe because the water is a little bit more tactile than air. I don't know, but I could get the thoughts like fish going. I also very much got the waves kind of being my fragmenting thoughts and trying to go. So that analogy worked better for me. I love the mind like the sky, too. That works for me, too. Do you guys have any preference? Are you doing anything? We've got somebody back there.
I was just going to say that when I do this, I kind of like to visualize myself in outer space. For me, like, I can't visualize the sky because my mind is all dark, so it just makes sense for me to feel like I'm floating in space.
Yeah, that
and
works
for
good.
Me, that's a lot more like peaceful.
And then what is your analogy for like the thoughts and how to get away from that or how to not attach to these things that are arising?
Well, I mean, you can visualize like stars and shooting stars or craters and meteors and things going through the sky, I guess.
Yep.
But for me, it's just so much infinite. It get that infinite feeling a lot more easily.
Yeah, a lot of my, on my computer screen and a lot of my desktop stuff, I have sky or the space because that infinite, it's a little bit of peace as I try to get all this chaotic work done. So I can agree with that. Are any of you trying to do, how many had, and you can just raise your hand on this, how many had a meditation practice before you came to this class? Oh, well, most everybody. How many has this helped to reaffirm that? Has it changed some things, or how has this potentially helped to think about the meditation? Anybody?
Well, for me, I think it's changed in that the analogies that you give with, you know, like the thoughts being like a wave and all these things, they sort of are more specific. Like, I think I've been doing breath meditations for a certain amount of time, for 3 years, and I think you focus too much on the the procedure too much, mm-hmm. and you don't really think about what the content of what you're doing. And I think that some of the analogies that you've given, like even just the last week I mentioned about the breath, you know, yeah. like starting over and all these things, I think it makes you more aware. I think if you sort of focus on the procedure and just counting your breath, which is, you know, can calm your mind, you know, worked for a while for me. But I think you kind of lose the goal, which is probably greater awareness of your thoughts. If you're just focused too much on the procedure, sitting a certain way, counting this way or whatever, I do like, you know, the different meditations like the sky and the waves and, you know, because it does provoke kind of thinking, even though you're not supposed to be thinking, you know, of what you're doing. And it does promote awareness in me. I don't know if anyone else has had that. Just sort of seeing at it from, like, getting into a practice, doing it a certain way, but then maybe doing it something different so you can see it from a different way.
Okay, so you're bringing up a really, really good point. So this really has been, we've just touched on meditation. We've literally just touched on it and some of the basics that you have to get in order to establish a good practice. Okay, so we have a full class, and we're going to talk about this at the end, of how to continue with meditation, Meditation 101, and how to do more with meditation, because we've just been very introductory here. Because without having that stable foundation to be able to learn to work with your mind in the different aspects, because it's learning, it's you're trying to change your mind. You're trying to transform your mind. So you are using your mind, you're working with your mind to change your mind. And so there will be a lot more. These are very, very, very basics that we've done here. Again, we'll talk about this later, what the next steps that you can do, because the analytical meditations that will come that will give you the work. It is your workshop. It is your classroom. And so there's a lot more to come beyond the little just snippets that we were able to do here. But it is just like you're just going to the gym every day, getting ready for that big event, okay, and starting to do this. If you're an athlete, in the football analogy, they play games on Sundays, but all week long they're in that gym working on their muscles so that they can go and do this. So, again, these are just little snippets because without that foundation of that procedure of how to sit and why you're sitting, okay, and how you're going to do it, just the logistics of it, You'll never be able to reach what Tibetan Buddhists are working toward, and we're kind of jumping the gun here, but it was such a good question, which is the calm abiding, which is that ability to get into that mental focus and hold that concentration for as long as you choose. So in order to be able to do that, you've got to be able to control your body. Therefore, you've got to be sitting in a position that you're not going to get, you know, your leg falling asleep, that you're not going to fall asleep physically because you're laying down, that you're able to breathe and hold that position. So it's, you're creating that stable base. So it's the foundation. And we've just literally just touched it in this class. There's so much more. But that's an excellent question. This is, again, this is just the teaser. You know, I'm scratching the surface of this stuff for you guys. There's so much more to come and so much deeper opportunities for learning. And you're already touching on it, and that's the beauty of this. So, perfect question. Did anybody remember to die? Did anybody wake up in the morning and remember, I only have till 5 p.m.? And how did that work for you? I should ask this before I come. Anybody new to this tonight? I was just going to say, all of a sudden it's like, wow. Okay, we jumped right in, and I keep looking at you. And I was like, did I know? Well, welcome. You stepped into class 5 of a 5-course series. So we're in the deep end of the pool for you already. My name is Sandy Carlson. Have you ever been to a Buddhist center before? Okay, I made everybody introduce themselves at the beginning of this so that we all knew. So tell me, are you here for class?
Yes.
Okay, I figured. Go ahead.
I'm Jericho Cannon, and this is my mom, Sarah Cannon.
Hello. You dragged your mom so you wouldn't have to come by yourself?
Well, it's kind of a requirement. So.
Oh, the mom has to come too, or a parent?
Or somebody, yes.
Somebody has to come with you so you don't. That's probably a good safety type of thing. And why did you choose Kanapa Center? How did you choose this?
Well, I checked the website and different places, and I thought this would be a very interesting experience.
Okay. Which college, which class is this?
I go to high school at Athens Drive, and it's for AP Human Geography.
Okay. And you had to pick some different culture or world religion?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And is there a paper due tomorrow?
No.
You're correct. I get that a lot, believe it or not. We have a lot of world religion classes, and all of a sudden I have students in here, and they'll wait for me for after class, and they've got to get that paper done. And I had 4 kids, so I get it. Okay, so I'll do this real briefly just to let them have a little bit, okay? So Kadampa Center is a Tibetan Buddhist center. Buddhism is actually, I'm going to just do a couple of flash ones for you, okay? Raleigh is actually the 10th largest city in the United States for a Buddhist population. I just discovered that about a year ago. You can find, just Google Raleigh Buddhism. Some of these things will come up for you. And that's because we have such a vibrant culture in Raleigh and a multicultural group between, whether it's Tibetan, Japanese, Chinese. We have all of the different cultures that have come here. This is a melting pot. And so we have a lot of that in here, and Western Buddhism is in some ways one of the fastest growing, I'm going to say religions, but Buddhism, when you really practice it in its purest sense, it's not a religion, it's a way of life. Okay? There's a lot more information on the website, but we have people of all faiths come here, all spiritualities come here, all ages, all groups, and it's not for us, it's not about proselytizing, it's about finding the tools that will help you be a happier person, because in its purest form, that's what we all want. Everybody on this planet, every sentient being on this planet just wants to be happy and free from suffering. So we have people of Jewish, Catholic, Christian, don't care, doesn't matter. We've got people of all different groups that come here. Okay, so it's a good place to check out. Okay? We're easy. All right? And you have dived in to the deep end of the pool. We've already did kind of the history of Buddhism, the first few classes. That's just factual information that you can find on just about any website or many of the books out there. So we did a lot of that, and then we started getting into some of the main concepts of Buddhism, karma, some of these big things. And this is Buddhism in a nutshell, so this means we're just going over the cliff notes. Okay, we've got a lot of different classes that allow us to deep dive on it. So the last class we started going in much more depth of karma. We're going to continue with some of the other major concepts, and then we're going to get into one of the biggest concepts of Buddhism tonight, which is going to be emptiness. And this is our last class, so here, just go with it, okay? Just go with it. If you got questions afterwards, I'll try to stick around and help answer some of these. And we have many people that can answer probably even better than I can. So how's that? A little bit more comfortable now? Meditation is the main tool for Buddhism because it's the practice of the mind. Everything in this room is about our minds, okay? And so this is meditation and why this was the main tool and what we're talking about. We do a meditation before and at the end is because we have to use our mind to work with everything. And so now I want to find out what everybody's mind was like when at the last class. One of the homework assignments was that as soon as they could remember, our last class was Tuesday night, as soon as they could remember when they woke up Wednesday morning, they had to think, I'm going to die at 5 p.m. tonight. So as soon as you can remember, your first cup of coffee, you know, in the shower, I don't care, I'm going to die at 5 p.m. tonight. And then how does that change your perspective throughout the day, thinking that you only have this day? Okay? Since it's just a class, we know A, you're not going to die. B, you still have to go to work. You still have to get your stuff done. You can't just like take off and go to the beach. So but how do you live differently? Would you be a kinder person? Would that grass look a little greener? Would you stop and smell the flowers? You know, would you be kinder to people? I want to know who all tried this and what was your experience when you thought you only have until 5. Anybody do it?
I thought it was great. I've tried to do a lot of exercises where you try to be in the present, mm-hmm. and sometimes I do good, a lot of times I drift, but this was just so extreme.
Yes.
And just having that on my mind kept me more focused throughout the day than any other times trying. And where I really noticed it was, you know, and we all do it, we're in the shower, and my mind races in the shower. And I just said, no, just, this is it. So just really enjoy the water, you know.
Could be your last one, yeah.
Could be my last one. And so I really tried to do this. Yeah. And when I got out of the shower, you know, sometimes I step out and I'm like, whoa, what, you know, where did I just spend my last 10 minutes?
That's on that.
And this just slowed everything down for me. So I think it's a great exercise. Yeah.
Yeah. Anybody else? Now, Steve, I know because he took the class, and you liked this one, too. You did this a couple of years ago.
So I'm a news junkie, and on the day I do this practice, I don't read the newspaper. I don't turn on the morning weather. I don't see what blew up in the world the day before.
So you continue this practice, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
See?
And it's really helpful to put a sticky note on your bathroom window, because you don't forget. You know, you wake up and you've been dreaming and you're hungry and you've got to go here and do this. And you walk in the bathroom, you turn on the light and you see that sticky note, you know, big bold letters up at death.
Yeah.
5 p.m. So it's, oh, yeah. So anyway, yeah.
Yeah. It just makes you so much more aware, so much more mindful. And again, it's not a depressing thing. I truly, from my own perspective, have found that it makes me, finding all of this awareness and this mindfulness is joyful for me. Thinking about death, okay, but we just tend to avoid it here. So did anybody else try it or just didn't?
I did try it. I woke up in the morning, and actually before I get out of bed, I thought of that. I thought, okay, 5 o'clock, I'm going to be dead. But then I couldn't convince myself of it during the day. So I just, and I thought about it a couple times during the day, but it was all like cartoonish.
Okay.
So I never.
It didn't grab
yeah.
you for that.
Yeah.
Okay.
There are different practices that some will work for you. This is the point. We all have different minds, okay? And it's not that one is better than the other. It's just that you know, you are going to have to keep looking for the thing that triggers your mindfulness a little bit more. Some things work. The stop lights work for some people, sirens, whatever your triggers are. You have to find out what works for you. And then just keep looking. Do you have any that you know of that kind of bring you to the present?
No.
Okay. Then that's what I would challenge you with. Try to start to find something that might help you to find that awareness, that little wake-up thing that happens anytime the telephone rings. I got to think about mine. And I don't even care. I've even got a friend that goes, she hears my voice. I'm supposed to think about mindfulness. So if that's, find something that works for you just to get you to trigger to think about that. Because, we've been talking about all this. We've been talking about the history of Buddhism, the beliefs, the concepts for the last 4 weeks, right? And the main thought is, to what point? Why? Why are we here? Why are we doing this? What are we talking about here? And that goal really is, we want to develop the full potential of our minds, the full potential of what our human mind is able to do, to try to start experiencing that true and lasting happiness. I mean, that's really what, we're all searching for that, right? That's really why we came. That's why y'all came, or why, what was your thought? The curiosity about Buddhism is one thing, but then you actually did it, where you didn't just sit here and Google it and read, Wikipedia on it. You actually walked into a Buddhist center. So you're looking, and again, I did the same thing. You're looking for something a little bit more. You're looking for some way to be happier, find more mindfulness, take less stress, be less angry for whatever reasons. And so it's, if we can start to work with our minds and find out how our minds work and how we can take these tools and work with them, that's where we're going. So again, technically we're looking for that term enlightenment or Buddhahood, right? And there's some teachers that will say you don't have to get all holy about it. Venerable Rubina Corton is a Buddhist nun that teaches here quite often. She is a straight shooter, man. She will hit you right, she will not cut you any slack at all. But she's the first one to say there's nothing holy about this. We tend to, when we're working on spiritual things, we tend to put it in our own box. Well, we're going to do that on Sundays. We're going to go to church, but we're going to go, if we're Buddhist, we're going to, get spiritual and we sit on the meditation cushion. That pick a spirituality, pick a religion. They'll have their times, and that's when you do your spiritual stuff. And then you go live your life and you're doing this, here's Sunday again, and I've got to do my spiritual stuff. Or, it's meditation time, I've got to go do my spiritual stuff, right? We're talking about the very practicality of doing this every moment of every day. This is how we live our lives now. It is not just when we're sitting on that cushion. It is just not on Sundays. This is about all the time. Okay, so these are tools that we try to use to stay mindful and aware and present all the time. And the more you can do it, the more that you're aware, the more that you have the ability to change your mind, and then you have a better opportunity for happiness and release of suffering, right? I mean, it's really that simple, right? That sounds flaky to y'all? So it is. It's very practical. So we talked about Dharma. Does anybody remember what that term technically was, Dharma? Okay. Dharma is a Sanskrit word, and it means that which holds or protects us from suffering. And one definition is that it refers to the teaching the teachings of the Buddha, and another meaning is the realizations in our mind. These aha moments when we have the experiences, when we take it from theoretical knowledge to experiential knowledge, that also is Dharma. Lama Yeshe, who is one of the founders of the FPMT, there's a quote from him that I always like, that the Dharma is anything that causes our delusions and our disturbing thoughts to subside, anything that brings us peace of mind and liberation from the confusion and suffering. And this, again, this is that everyday life stuff. We don't always get that message, but that's really what we're trying to do.
I have a question.
Okay.
Last week you mentioned the three aspects of the path, and then
yep,
tonight
we're
going to
go that.
The wisdom of emptiness, and then the first part was the Four Noble Truths, and then the Eightfold Path, and there's some ethics and morals in there. So that's the renunciation part.
Which actually, I don't think we really got too much with this class, did we?
No.
Because we skipped
well,
through.
Well, I mean, you taught it, but we just didn't define it.
Right.
And so, bookend between renunciation and emptiness is this bodhicitta.
Yep.
Could you talk about bodhicitta for a minute?
We will. Actually, let's go right into it. Okay. So you'll hear about the three scopes of the Lamrim. Because I want to take time with bodhicitta. Let's put it in context, okay? So we have the lower scope, where we're focusing more on a fortunate rebirth. We have the middle scope, where we're focusing on liberation from suffering. And we have the greater scope, which is focused on enlightenment for the benefit of all beings. So some of these things, I'm just trying to throw these terms at you, okay, and these definitions at you, so that when you go to another class, and you move on, you're teaching, you're going to recognize some of these basic concepts and terms. Okay? So the lower scope, the middle scope, the greater scope. You can work on all three simultaneously. You do not have to get this to go on to here to go on to here. But you're going to see these different things in the teachings and some of the words that you've got. This is just an organizational way to help to understand the Buddhist teachings. Okay? So renunciation, which he's getting at, okay, because we have in the Four Noble Truths, you remember we have the truth of suffering, the truth of the cause of suffering, okay, let's do the doctor analogy, because I think that's the one you guys all pretty much understood, okay, you've got to identify that you're sick, you've got to, where is that, because let's make sure that we're doing it the right way. Because that's going to get us to his question. Okay, the truth of suffering, the truth of the cause of suffering, the truth of the cessation of suffering, and the truth of the path to the cessation of suffering. It's like going to the doctor, admit you're sick, you get the diagnosis, what is the medicine? You got to take the medicine. All right? So in that, the Four Noble Truths, because I'm not going to switch slides on it, okay, that last one, the fourth noble truth, the truth of the path to the cessation of suffering, and there is a path of practice that leads to great nirvana or enlightenment. The best way to describe this fourth truth is renunciation, bodhicitta, and the wisdom of emptiness. This is what we're talking about here. That fourth noble truth, we're going to break that fourth noble truth out with three things. Renunciation, bodhicitta, and the wisdom of emptiness. Renunciation, okay, the state of mind not having the slightest attraction to samsaric pleasures for even a second and having the strong wish for liberation. Anytime anybody hears renunciation from a Buddhist, they think, oh, I have to give everything up and go live in a hut. I have to give it all up. That's the first thought, isn't it? Renunciation, I got to give it all up. I can't be happy. I can't have any more fun. Right? Not true. Okay? Again, the Buddhist practitioners that I know are some of the most joyful people I've ever met. Renunciation does not mean giving up all possessions, does not mean you can't have fun, does not mean you're giving up joy. It is an internal process. Okay? You're giving up the attachment to these things. You're giving up your attachment to these things. Does that make sense? Okay? It's not, you know what, it's, you know, I can go through some analogies for it. You know, you get attached to having chocolate cake, you order the chocolate cake at the restaurant, they come and they're out of chocolate cake, you get carrot cake and you're all upset. Okay, how many people get frustrated when some of these things happen? Okay, you just don't get attached to these things. You can still have all the joy that you want and have fun. You know, you still live in your nice house, but it just means you're not attached to it. If something happens that you lose that house, you are not devastated by it. Okay, it's wonderful to have. You're going to enjoy it. You're going to share it. But it could disappear tomorrow, and your happiness is not dependent on that stuff. And when you have that realization that your happiness is not dependent on these things out here, you're not attached to them. So does that make sense? It does not mean that you have to give it all up.
Does that go along with your relationship with people also?
I love these questions. Okay. So we use the word attachment in the United States as a good word, right? I'm very attached to my husband. I'm very attached to my children. Again, this is about the definitions. Okay. If you truly, what is the Buddhist, and somewhere down here I've got all of these things, because we've got nothing but terms here. Okay, attachment is a disturbing thought that exaggerates the positive qualities of an object and wishes to possess it. Love, from a Buddhist perspective, means you want that other person to be happy. Period. Not, I want that person to be happy as long as they make me happy. Okay? So you have to kind of work through this. So, I love my husband dearly. Okay? And I want him to be happy. And if I can do that without the attachment of the I involved, then that means no matter what he does, I love him. How many parents? Mom, unconditional love for her, right? There's not a thing that she could do that would make you stop loving her, correct? As bad as she could be, you would love her no matter what because you have pure love for her, right? So this parental love that we have, seems to be, I think, a really good analogy for that purest, true love definition. But a lot of people don't have kids, so they can't quite understand that selfless love. You know, you can get mad at her, you know, all day long, but you're gonna love her. So if you can love your significant other no matter what, instead of based on what they're doing for you, you've gotta find that I. And if you keep saying, oh, I love my husband, he makes me so happy. Wrong. Because that puts the focus on you. Okay? Am I making a little bit of sense? Okay? Yes.
And isn't that the definition of bodhicitta?
It is the definition of bodhicitta. Okay? So the definition of bodhicitta is a principle consciousness that it combines the two factors of wishing to free all beings from suffering and of wishing to attain enlightenment because of that. So bodhicitta, you're going to hear this word, bodhicitta, bodhisattvas, okay? That instant mind that has nothing but love and compassion for others, okay? That you want to free every other sentient being from suffering. Period. And you are working toward becoming enlightened in order to do that.
When we say that we love unconditional, but some people don't realize, even if they're in bad relationship, abusive relationship, even though you love, you can still put that boundary.
Oh, yes.
And love them to educate them or do things.
I love that you brought this up because it's very important to understand that, okay? So a lot of people tend to think, oh, you're a Buddhist, so you must be a doormat. Nothing is further from the truth. There's still a wisdom that has to come, okay? So it's not just we're going to talk. So I think I may have said this joke at the beginning of class. You can't be just nice. You have to be smart, too, okay? With compassion comes wisdom. And that's what you're working on. Again, this is what I got tattooed on my arms because it's one of my base practices. Okay, the compassion part seems to be pretty easy. The wisdom part I'm working on. Okay, but in an abusive relationship, it doesn't mean that you stay in that abusive relationship. You have to put your back. You have to use the wisdom that this is not a good situation for me. So in some ways, we're talking conventionally. We're not talking this theoretical, you know, class stuff. Okay, we're talking that this is a very real situation. You don't love somebody that's hurting you and stay there. you need to use some wisdom and extract. You can still love them, but this isn't working. Okay, so you have to have that wisdom that goes with any relationship. Okay, a lot of times it's that stuff where you start thinking at home, well, I'm the only one that's clean in the house, and you start to get frustrated and stuff. That's the stuff that you can work with. Okay, that's the stuff that, start making the list of the things that other person does do for you. Okay, but if it's in an abusive relationship, or there's some kind of physical danger or emotional danger, which is just as bad, okay, then you need to use the wisdom to step out. Okay, so conventionally, we need to be very aware, and I love that you bring these questions up, because sometimes people do tend to take some of these things all the way down. Again, you take it to the extremes of, well, Sandy said, I'm supposed to love everybody. Well, you know what? You can love them from a distance, too. Okay, so use some wisdom there. But the bodhicitta, again, I tend to use, so you will hear us use, you will read a lot where they'll use the term mother quite often, because that mother, that parental love, it is something that a lot of people can understand, and how your mother, hopefully had loved you. Sometimes you have, bad relationships there too. But you'll hear that mother sentient being, that mother love used quite often as an analogy for some of the things when we talk about bodhicitta and some of that bodhisattva way of life. So you can add to this, because it is the bodhisattva and the bodhicitta vows.
Well, I mean, everything in this room helps us cultivate.
Yes.
Bodhicitta. I mean, everything, every icon, every graphic representation, the bodhisattvas, the Tara and Jinrinzik, all of these things help me to cultivate a care for caring for other people. And it's easy to say, I think, oh, I want everyone to be happy. I want everyone to be free of suffering. That's not bodhicitta. The bodhisattva, so if Sandy was my girlfriend and Sandy made me happy, because what Sandy does for me makes me happy, that's not bodhicitta. If I love Sandy, then as bodhisattva, then if Sandy came home and said, the only way I can be happy is to go be with Chris, then I would be happy for both of them. I would say, yeah. But what do we do when if Sandy comes home conventionally, I'm like, you bitch. So to hear these terms, it's really easy to miss the significance of them. And the bodhisattvas that we talk about, they have reached, as a bodhisattva, they have attained bodhicitta. They've attained enlightenment, but they're putting off nirvana to help everyone else reach enlightenment. So what that means is these are not real beings. This is an idea. This is a concept. But if this was a real being, then Chinrinzik is putting off nirvana to help us reach enlightenment. So that's our goal, all of us, to reach bodhicitta, to reach bodhisattva. And so that means that none of us get there unless all of us get there.
Yeah. Yeah, you've seen, if any of you are up on Facebook and stuff, you'll see some of those things. And again, this is it's challenging to come to some of these from a Western perspective, because we just don't think like this. And, much to our shame in many ways. I love that one Facebook thing where they had done that. They had all those children in Africa at a school. And they tried to set up a race and create a winner. If you get down there, then you're going to get that basket of apples. And they took this whole class outside, and they were trying to get physical activity or some other form of something. But they'd set up this competition about it, and the class joined hands and all raced down together so that they could all share, because they didn't they didn't have this competitive thing that we have here, and they just didn't think that way. It was just. Literally, they didn't think the same way we do. And this is some of that thing where we're trying to talk about this bodhicitta and bodhisattva way of life. And again, we've got just a little bit of time here, so we're going to kind of work on this. Engaging bodhicitta, so actually trying to live this. The altruistic mind of enlightenment that actively engages in the six perfections and the four means of drawing sentient beings to the Dharma after the bodhisattva vows have been taken. So again, we're just going to skip over some of this stuff, but what are we talking about here? Okay, what are we talking about here? The six perfections. Take the Buddhist trappings off of this and just look at these words. Generosity, morality, patience, joyful effort, concentration, and wisdom. I don't care what spirituality, what religion, what culture, what anything, what any label that you have, we can all look to work with those words. Okay? Generosity, I'm going to just give you one example because we're going to keep moving, but this is another thing where there's a difference between what we in the West think of from our meaning of that word to what it is from a Buddhist perspective. Okay, so generosity from Western perspective is just giving, right? Just giving. Generous, being giving. From a Buddhist perspective, they take it a little further. Generosity means to be able to give without regret. How many times do we give? Here comes the wisdom and compassion. How many times do we just give and then you think, oh, I wish I hadn't done that. Or the next day happens and, ooh, I shouldn't have afforded that. Or, you know, there's always that little, you know, or there's strings attached. We're very good about giving gifts with strings. Okay? So generosity from a Buddhist perspective is there's no strings. You just give. And what you do with it, my act is done from the moment I give it. Okay? No strings attached, no matter what you're going to do with it. And then being able to give without regret. So we take everything as so much deeper. And again, we just don't have the time in this class to go through things. You'll have some opportunities. But every single one of those has much deeper meaning than what we do in our Western language. Okay? But I think any of us could get behind those. The four means, giving, speaking kind words, teaching to the level of the student, and practicing what one teaches. Simple. This is part of truly engaging in bodhicitta and living it beyond the vows that we take. Giving, understandable, generosity, speaking kind words. You would be surprised. Here's your next ones, okay? So these are the things I want you to work on beyond my class, is being aware of what you say all day long. And you would be surprised at how few kind words might come out of your mouth. Don't worry about anybody else. All you can control is your own. Kind words. Words have power. Okay? Just be kind. It's as simple as that. Be kind to everybody that you meet. Try to think, I'm going to be kind in every word I say tomorrow. Okay? Even when you're angry with somebody, okay, if you can turn that anger away, even if they are wrong, you can say it and work with that better. Okay? Teaching to the level of the student. If I came walking in here for this class and started talking way above your heads, that would not be beneficial to anybody. Okay? So you teach to the level of the student. And then practicing what one teaches. If I don't really do this, then I'm totally not. If I don't walk the talk, if I don't do it, then what good am I from that aspect? Okay? There's got to be more to it. If you just spout the words and you don't say it, we all know what that looks like. We've all seen that in school. We've seen it in a lot of things. You have to actually live it.
And so that means when the lady in front of me at the grocery store in the express lane has a cart full of things, then I have to do all those.
You have to do all those. This is that practice, remember? This is stopping at the red light. These are the things that you're working at all the time. Okay? So when that person's in front of you at the grocery store and they pull out that book of coupons and you know you're going to be there for a lot longer. And then instead of getting frustrated, you got to work with it. So this is that, here's that anger thing. Okay. Compassion, the sincere wish, we've done this one, the sincere wish that others be free from suffering. We're going to go through some of these definitions just to remind you. Love, the sincere wish that others have happiness and its causes. We've been talking about this. Loving kindness, the wish for others to have happiness and its causes. So you're combining these things. We're talking about loving kindness. You're going to hear these terms a lot as you, you know, if you read about anything past this class. These are words you're going to hear, especially if you're reading in the Mahayana tradition. Loving kindness. Equanimity. This is what we talked about last time. That absence of the usual discrimination of sentient beings deriving from the realization that all beings are equal in wanting happiness and freedom from suffering. That means all people, all animals, all insects, anything with a mind. So we talked about this way back at the beginning. Semchen. S-E-M-C-H-E-N. Semchen. Mind bearer. Okay? As science evolves, they're even discovering that there's the possibility that some microbes have the ability to move and take action. So that means there's a mind there. As quantum physics develops, who knows how far this is going to go. The Dalai Lama even talks about it. He loves science. And he says, this continues. So science and Buddhism go hand in hand. The more they discover, the more Buddhism accepts those. Okay. Yes.
In self-compassion, I think we let go that equanimity when we care for other people. We don't care for ourselves. Like if your mom, and from my culture, you know, we care of Indians. They outgo and do for family, husband, but they don't care for their self. So I'm practicing the equanimity of self-care.
Huge. Huge. There's an entire section that will go down to self-compassion. Okay? She is exactly right. We do not ever have compassion for ourselves. I can sit here and walk you through this beautiful self-compassion meditation because we just don't. We will cut somebody else slack all day long, but we don't cut ourselves any slack, okay? I'm not talking about self-pity. There's a big difference, okay? I'm not talking about, you know, some of the things that we tend to do, but truly, truly giving ourselves that compassion that we would show to somebody else. And again, just turn that around. You have to be able to swim before you can help somebody else. This is why we're taking the time for ourselves to learn this, because if we don't get it for ourselves, how are you ever going to help somebody else? Okay? You may do that a little bit, but there, again, the wisdom with the compassion, you have to get this for yourself too. You can muddle through and help some other people, but in order to truly help them, you really have to understand it and be able to help yourself. So self-compassion is huge. Guess what? Geshe Gelug Chöd, our resident teacher, talks about that all the time. So does the Dalai Lama. Huge.
So when I'm on the airplane with my brother-in-law and the oxygen goes away, I put the oxygen mask on myself before I put it on my passed out brother-in-law.
Yep. This is it. It is that wisdom. You have to take care of yourself before you can take care of somebody else. Okay? So, huge. Labels. We talked about labels last time. We're going to get into this more as we talk about emptiness here pretty soon. Okay, but we did that equanimity meditation. Okay, where it's just all labels. All right. The specific one that we did was the stranger, friend, and enemy. Because all people have been, you know, the person that you are married to now. Well, at one point they were a stranger. Then they were probably your friend. And then you fell in love. I mean, you can walk it through so many different ways. So we're going to work with labels. Great bodhicitta. Since beginningless time, so the concept in Buddhism is that this has been beginningless, right? Since beginningless time, all beings have been all things to each other. And this is the basis for the development of great love, great compassion, and great bodhicitta. If I shut this door, and I look at this room as a microcosm, okay? Let's just walk through here. So for eons, thousands of years, we, just in this room, go through the death and rebirth cycle and the karma, right? Death and rebirth. We would all probably, eventually, all be each other's mother, son, brother, all of these things, if we just took it just down to this room. So this is what one of the concepts is in Buddhism, is that we have all met before. We will meet again because we have this karmic connection. All right? And so I've probably been your mother at one point. You have probably been my father at one point. You've probably been my mother at one point. Okay? So to have this, if you create this feeling that we all have this interconnectedness, you tend to treat people a little bit differently. You tend to treat people a little bit kinder if you kind of go with that thought a little bit. Again, these are working hypotheses. Okay, it's a way to work with your mind, okay, because you treat your mom kinder than you do that stranger. So again, these are all just ways to kind of work with your mind a little bit. And these are the basis for some of these, again, great love, great compassion, and great bodhicitta. Let's get into a couple more words because we've got to start flying. So there, has anybody been on the website and pulled all of the papers, all the PDFs that are on there? Has anybody been looking at any of that stuff?
Not yet.
Okay, so when you do, you're going to come on this prayer. If you do, it's called the Foundation of All Good Qualities. Okay, I love all of the handouts and the meditations are up there, and there's a few other papers up there that I want to just go over briefly before we start tackling this last concept. And you're going to come up on a handout called The Foundation of All Good Qualities. And there's a lot of the Buddhism in a Nutshell classes that really use, like I use the Four Noble Truths as kind of that framework for a lot of what we did in this class, right? And a lot of places will use the Foundation of All Good Qualities in that same way because it's that same type of prayer. And as you go through this, this too can be used as a glance meditation. The entire teachings of the Buddha, they're all wrapped up in here, just like I'd said the Four Noble Truths are. But you're going to come across a few other words that are in this that we haven't really talked about, and so I want to explain them. We touched on them a little bit. But in this, the very first verse is, the foundation of all good qualities is the kind and venerable guru. So as soon as I say the word guru, for a lot of Westerners, okay, it's you have a different connotation. So guru, lama, literally that this all means, this is what the words that we use is teacher, and it means heavy, heavy with knowledge. And we tend to think of guru in the West as a negative word because it's who all's drinking the Kool-Aid, right? It's a cult. Oh, my God, if I went home, you know, and started talking to some people around my town and said, oh, I just was talking with my guru today, you know, it's like I would probably get some looks. Guru is a word that means heavy with knowledge of the Dharma. So guru and lama, okay, these are teachers. Now, we talked a little bit, again, in the first few classes about the difference between a Western teacher. We have our teachers here in the West, and we think about it, your teacher in high school, your teachers in college, and these are the people that you learn from. I've got a teaching degree. Okay, so these are people that you learn from, and you go, and they've got this knowledge that you want. You get it. You get your degree. In Tibetan Buddhism, and especially with the Dharma teachers and these monks and nuns that we have, teacher is a different word. Okay, and it means so much more. And actually all over the world, I think Japan, Korea, there's a lot of different places where that teacher word means so much more. And we've got to be a little bit, I want to get these out. In Tibetan Buddhism especially, you have to look at that teacher. They will tell you, there's some that say, there's language out there that says, you've got to look at that teacher for over 12 years before you can choose to have him as your teacher, before you should choose him. They have to have specific qualities. I'm not going to get into all of these right now, because again, you can look at some of this. But these teachers have to have specific qualities. Discipline, mental quiescence, more knowledge than you do, enthusiastic perseverance, a treasury of scriptural knowledge. They've got to know all of the Buddhist teachings. Insight into the understanding of emptiness. There's lists. I told you, Tibetan Buddhism has lists for lists for lists. These teachers have specific qualities, and you are supposed to look at that teacher and check them out. We do not just drink the Kool-Aid. You have to learn. You check out these teachings. You check out these teachers, okay, before you even choose, because a lot of people get real excited when they come to these classes and they start learning this. Well, now I need a spiritual guide. Okay, I need a teacher. We have an entire module on the spiritual guide in Discovering Buddhism where you will take 6 weeks just to learn about this because it's a different perspective. Geshe Gelug, when he teaches here on Sunday, he calls himself our Dharma friend. He will not call himself a teacher because to him that's a different definition. Okay, and so we have that. I'm not your teacher right now. I am your Dharma friend. All right, we have a different thing for that. Well, guess what? So you've checked that teacher out. You've gone through all of this. You're looking at all this. He looks like he fits the qualities of all of these things. And so now I want him to be my teacher. Well, guess what? That teacher also gets to look at you, and you as a student have specific qualities. It's just like college where you have to be accepted. So, again, I'm going to start to speed this up because we're going through some of this stuff pretty quickly. But There's a different definitions for some of these things, the spiritual guide, the teacher, the guru, the lama, and it's important that you understand those. So it's just got to be entered into after a lot of very, very careful consideration. Anything, any questions about anything so far? Okay. So now we're going to go into the third principal aspect of the path. So again, we did the Four Noble Truths. We split out that fourth noble truth, okay, and we're going into the third thing, the principal aspects of the path. Renunciation, bodhicitta, the wisdom of emptiness. Okay. I'm going to do a couple of rules first. Which one do I want to do? Bowl, spoon, Tupperware, pen, phone. Okay, so I got a bowl full of stuff here, right? If I took out the phone and I put my phone down, is this bowl empty? There's still stuff in there, right? So the bowl is not empty. I took out the phone. This is where we're going to start working at language here. Could I technically say that this bowl is empty of phone? We don't speak this way in the Western language. But technically, I could say that this bowl is empty of phone. But it does not mean nothing, does it? Okay, just understand I'm doing this as just a base thing that emptiness does not mean nothingness. We tend to go down that path too much when we start talking emptiness. So this is Sandy's rule number one. All right, but this is not nihilism. Okay, emptiness does not mean nothingness. Got to get that one out there right there. Do not expect to pick this up. This is one of the most difficult concepts here, and we have got like 15 minutes to talk about it, all right? But it's definitely important that you really try to think about this not from the Western words. But open your mind to some of these deeper meanings that we seem to talk about. Emptiness is the absence or lack of true existence. I'm going to come at this from 52 million different ways as I can in the next 10 minutes, so go with it. Emptiness, the absence or lack of true existence. Ultimately, every single phenomenon is empty of existing truly or from its own side or independently. You're going to hear a lot of these terms, existing from its own side. But I'm going to read something directly from Venerable Amy Miller's book, Buddhism in a Nutshell. What does the term emptiness mean? According to Tibetan Buddhism, Emptiness refers to an absence of inherent existence. What is inherent existence? Inherent existence is a quality we instinctively project onto ourselves and everything we experience. We see things as solidly, concretely existing from their own side, in and of themselves, by way of their own nature, independent of causes and conditions, parts, or our own mind experiencing them. Got a little limp, but what is this? A flower? Tell me when it stops being a flower. Is it still a flower? Okay. It's not a flower. Parts? That parts here? Dependent arising. Here's the next big concept that's going to go along with this. The way that the self and phenomena exist conventionally as relative and interdependent. Everything comes into existence in dependence on causes and conditions, parts, and a labeling mind. So how did this flower come into existence? A seed? Water? Sunlight, right? So all the different parts of it start to grow. And then we named it a flower, didn't we? We did. So causes and conditions, parts, and a labeling mind. I can even take that back to the seed. Who planted the seed? Where did the seed come from? All of these different parts and conditions. Okay, my phone. I'm not going to rip this thing apart. But you can understand the parts, the conditions. Okay, somebody built this. There was a factory. Okay, there was the marketing. There's people buying it. Apple. Okay. So I can come up with all of the different causes and conditions for this. I can break it down into its parts. And a labeling mind that recognizes it. Okay. You can go through anything. Go through anything right now. Pick something in this room. Pick anything. A person. Sandy. All right? So I don't exist from my own side, but I think I do because this is the problem that we have. Okay? I got a body. I'm made up of parts. I have causes and conditions. I have my mom and dad. Got together. Had a baby. Grew up. Sunlight, water, food, all of the things that went into me being me. Okay? And then you all, I told you my name was Sandy. Right? But think of all the different parts that I have. Okay? So if I sat here under this board and I erased that board and you guys just started putting labels up there, what are some of your labels that you could use for me?
Female.
Glasses. Brunette. American. Chubby. You know, I mean, just pick your words, right? These are all labels. Okay? So we have the labeling mind, but I do not exist from my own side. So we're going to slowly walk through this. This is nothing is permanent. Here's where we come into impermanence, because impermanence and wisdom of emptiness kind of all have to work together a little bit.
What do you mean when you say you don't exist from your own?
Okay, so she's asking, what do I mean when I don't exist from my own side? If I was this permanent existing thing from my own side, because you see me as one thing, he sees me as something else, okay? So your projections and how you see me, we think that I have this permanent, like I will find my eye. I'm going to go at this from not a person because I think it's harder to do it with a person. Okay, so I have this board here. I have this board. It has the parts, it has the conditions, people built it, right? And we labeled it a whiteboard, right? If that was a permanent existing from its own side, then it would be that for everything, wouldn't it? Anybody, any sentient mind. Okay, what does a dog see? Something to chew on or play with. What does an ant see? An obstacle, something to climb. right? We put these labels on things, and then we expect them to be this permanent thing. From the very second they come into existence, they're impermanent and they'll be going out, right? So they rise and they fall. If it was permanent, it would always be there, never change, ever. And it would be the same for you, same for you, same for you.
So like the sun would be permanent.
Is the sun permanent? Is it permanent, that star? It maybe have a longer life than, or existence time, but is the sun permanent?
So is there anything permanent?
Yeah.
Space. The space between phenomena. But that's...
A little deep. Yeah.
And the quality of emptiness of anything, too. Yeah. But that's heavy.
Yeah, so we're getting into... So there are a couple of things that are, but that's what this is like in, you know, year three of some of this stuff. So there are some things that we would consider permanent from our perspective, from our definition, okay? But one of the main answers that I usually give is no. Right now, while we're trying to wrap our minds around this, yes.
Maybe this will help. Is this working?
No.
Okay. It's, we look at, like we buy a new car and we think, wow, that car is just, you know, really hot stuff. But if you think about it, there's no real emptiness, says there's no real hot carness there on it. It's only made up of parts and causing conditions, and your mind thinks that it's really cool. I mean, somebody who never worried about cars or anything, they would look at it and say, oh, what a bunch of metal and rubber and oil and gas and everything that came together to make that object. But they wouldn't think of it as really hot stuff because...
Yeah, if it existed from its own side,
yeah,
it would be the same thing to every mind.
Right. That quality does not exist in the object itself. And that leads to a bunch of these obscurations. Yeah. The big delusion.
Yeah, it's the big delusion is a good way to put it. If things really existed from their own side, then they would be the same to every mind. Okay? But we put our own projections on these things based on our karma. So in a way, you can think about it as, you can kind of think that karma is how things operate and emptiness is how things exist. That's kind of right, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes, it is.
Okay. So karma is the way that things operate, and emptiness is the way that things exist. Okay, so, you know, I like the color purple. And so, but you may like the color red. So we have our own perceptions of things. So we take this thing, okay, and then we wrap it up. I've wrapped up this beautiful thing and all this purple paper and all of these different things, stuck a bow on it, but how it exists in there is different than all of these wrappings that I'm putting on it. I'm trying to think of some of the other.
Well, the flower, I think, is one of the best because when you describe something with yellow petals, my mind instantly labels that flower. But an insect, a bee that's looking for pollen,
right,
has no concept of flower. But this projection is so powerful in our mind that it's flower. And it's
the label.
It's the label.
Yeah.
It does not exist the way we think it does. And that's the source of our attachments. That's one of the reasons I think all this is so important, is when you realize that these things, that there's nothing permanent, why are you attached to them? It's just like our life is going to end in death. These things are all going to disintegrate over time. The wooden table, really that table is tabley wood. It's wood that's configured to look like a table. But there is no the label table is something we've all agreed to call
it
that
in order to communicate. Right. So we have to make sure that we understand that we have to communicate. So we come up with words in order to communicate concepts. Okay, that too is part of the thing that we have to be a little bit careful of, because again, we sat here the whole class where I was very careful about the definitions of things, because we put these words and we use these words and then we don't look at it any deeper. And we have to think about all of this stuff deeper. Okay, so we use these, for us, we're using these Western words, okay, and we have to come up with the concepts and we have to think deeper than what these words are. So the emptiness does not mean nothingness. We're talking about something totally different than the way we usually work with that word. Okay? So if we're all dependent, we are all existing dependently on parts, causes and conditions, and a labeling mind. If we existed independently, then that is a permanent thing, and that just, there isn't anything that's permanent out there. And think about the joy that this brings. Okay, what does this mean? What is this, in application, what does this mean?
The end of suffering.
The end of suffering. It means I can work with it. Okay, if this was permanent, then how do I get the opportunity to change it? Okay, even our world. Okay, if this flower was a permanent thing, okay, and try to think about it. I mean, right now, you guys are all going, okay, go through the thing. Okay, if it was cement, what's the most permanent thing you can think of? Okay, well, now what does that do? Now all of a sudden it is, even just in the concepts of trying to think about it, it's lost the beauty that it holds for us. Okay, but again, this is that we are trying to wrap our minds around, right now, in the last 10 minutes, one of the most largest concepts that there are in Buddhism. But that wisdom of emptiness. Now, if you try to think about it all the way through now, and how can you apply this literally in your everyday life, okay, and try to think and work with this in a way that, you know what, that I'm so upset about, you know, somebody just crashing in our car, somebody just, you know, all of these awful things that happen are out there. They are dependent on causes and conditions. And a labeling mind, well, you know what? What if I label it differently? This is where I said that truth of suffering, it's the truth of happiness. Work with the labels. Okay? It is just there because you've labeled it. You label that person a friend, and you label that one an enemy. Well, even if you change the label, it forces you to think about it. Again, we're not trying to, it's the baby steps here, but just to try to capture the essence of what we're talking about. But this is part of how you work to change your mind. And just being aware that these are just labels. They are just labels, and you can work with it. Now, conventionally, of course, it's still there, like I said. That you've seen some of those things where, you know how your mind works, where you're, you know, even walking along a trail, and all of a sudden you think you see a snake. That's a stick. Okay, it's your perception, right? So you can see how these perceptions can change with your mind. Again, I'm just trying to get you to understand how to look at your mind a little bit. This is what we're working with. So think about those labels that we put on people. Man, woman, black, white, Indian. Think about the problems that we have because of these labels. Just because of the labels. Not even the reality of anything. I'm talking conventionally. I'm not even talking spiritually right now. I'm talking conventionally we have problems with labels. And the problem that we really have is that everything that we perceive every day, we think it's coming from that object, and it's not. It's coming from us. So if we can just even start to have that awareness, it is shocking what a change that is.
What you're saying, how our perspective is not really that object or that person, is what we perceive, mm-hmm. is what we perceive was going on.
Yes.
Is that, like, wrong view? Is that Am I remembering that correctly? Like one of the sufferings is
so
view, like wrong view.
Wrong view has like so many different levels that I want to be really careful of that one. Okay. Not really.
Okay.
I'm going to say that carefully. It's very dependent on how you're trying to think of that other person. Like I said, we've got to flip an onion, people, where it's those little translucent layers that keep coming off. It's very dependent on, there's so much dependence on what the intention is, what you thought, what you're looking at, you know, how the wrong view, are you doing it, you know, intentionally, you know, there's so many different things, but that one I'm going to leave until the DB class because there's layers of there and I don't want to misrepresent something. But sometimes a willful what'd you say?
Well, I mean, you can Google Eightfold Path and all of that is going to be in there. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
I mean, Google knows what Eightfold Path is.
It's all in C. Yeah. Yeah. The Eightfold Path is another, like I said, list for list. This is what we do. So how do things really exist? They exist dependently, changing from moment to moment, and the minute something comes into existence, it's impermanent, and it's arising and subsiding, just like your thoughts. Okay? So what's next? That is the big question for a lot of people. What is next? Meditation 101, let's go through a few of these classes. Meditation 101 is actually the alternating class from this class. It lasts for 5 weeks. We'll look up dates in a minute. And it will go into much more detail about meditation practice. It'll go through a lot of these different meditations that we've done and even more. And it's a wonderful class, same thing, 7 to 8:30. We'll watch the times. Discovering Buddhism. It's a 14-module course that takes 2 years to complete. Those classes last about 6 weeks, sometimes 7 weeks, and they'll take an entire module just to talk about karma. They'll take an entire module to talk about emptiness. They'll take an entire module to talk about the spiritual guide. Okay, we had, you know, 15 minutes to cover these things, but that's where you can do your deeper dive. They are coming up. They just had the first module. You guys are in a very... You had the good karma to come to the center when this two-year round is just starting up again. They just finished the first module. Actually, they're finishing it, Mind and Its Potential. And then the next module is How to Meditate. So you have two opportunities to take meditation coming up here. The Sunday teachings. That's another good place to come. Geshe Galchoda is traveling right now, but Geshe Paulden Tsangpo is teaching. We also have some of our other more advanced students will be teaching. We also have several visiting teachers, Karuna Caton and Jonathan Landau. Karuna Caton has been studying Buddhism for decades, and he is a very advanced teacher. He's been part of the FPMT, and he's taught over at Kopan Monastery over in Nepal. There's more information about him out there. Jonathan Landau wrote Buddhism for Dummies. He's going to have a lot of phenomenal classes. And I think one of the things I'd like to do is make sure that you guys have seen the website to be able to go and just look at the calendar. Yeah, Buddhism for Dummies. Karuna Caton wrote The Misleading Mind, phenomenal book. And Buddhism for Dummy, Jonathan Landau. But if you go into the Kadampa Center website, hit a calendar up here in the corner, you'll be able to see what we've got going on. Is Karuna Caton here tomorrow?
Yes.
Is he here tomorrow? Holy buckets, I totally lost track of time. So Wednesday, you can actually go on here and you can see the different things he's going to be teaching on. Karuna Caton is here. Dharma in Parenting with Karuna Caton, very good class. I'm sure it is. Karuna's a phenomenal teacher. And then the Misleading Mind Weekend Workshops. Everything that we do here at the center, all of these workshops and things like that, are free. Okay, we do them through sponsorships. We do them through the generosity of the people that visit and the people that come here. So feel free to come and check this out. Yep, Discovering Buddhism, Mind and Its Potential Practice Night. So that's the last class of Discovering Buddhism there. But you can just, oh, we're going to learn how to make malas. I haven't gone to this website in like 2 weeks. And look at what all they put on here. So you can kind of see what's going on here on the website. And next month, let's do a quick check because meditation, here's where Jonathan Landau is. I am serious. That's going to be a phenomenal opportunity. Check out some of those classes. Discovering Buddhism, How to Meditate. Jonathan Landau is going to be teaching the first one, looks like. So, the 7th. Now, if you go in here and you click on these, there'll be much more information, okay? So, tool around on the website. Foundation of All Good Qualities, that's the prayer that I just talked about. He's going to be doing a full class on it. So, if you go to Spiritual Program 2, and we're going to stop here, you can go over here to the beginner programs. Is that where I am? Nope. Introductory programs. There's Buddhism in a nutshell. Click on that. Here are the handouts for this class. They're right here on this website.
The slides you put on, where are they on there?
The slides are not something I put up because those are the PowerPoint that I've been working with. I haven't put that up because that's really my own, and all of us teachers have different, we're going to all stay on the same thing, but we all have different, and one of these days we should get together and standardize things, but we all have our different teaching styles. I cannot thank you enough for coming. If you have any questions afterwards, a lot of you have been emailing me, and that's phenomenal. Keep track if you would like to. If you have benefited all from this class, feel free to make a donation. We all have, we're all volunteers here, but it costs money to keep the lights and stuff on, and we appreciate any of that. And if you want to stay after and ask me any questions, because normally I leave some time afterwards and I just didn't, so it's up to you. I will hang around for a little bit. Check it out. The Kanapa Center has a lot to offer. We're not trying to turn anybody into Buddhists. You can just check it out and not have to worry about anything, all right? Thanks all for coming. I really appreciate your time. Thank you.